right, I am happy to welcome in first interview of the All-Star break, one that we've been talking about for a while, but we haven't gotten around to. Friend of the podcast, Average Joe DFS. Joe, how are you, my friend?
I am good. Yes, I love the podcast. You do a great job. I think you're one of the better ones out there, and you just got a knack for it, my man.
Hey, I appreciate it, buddy. I try. I got to try, right? I think I have to try every single day or else
right.
People will be like, hey, where'd the show go? Joe, we met back in the NBA season. You are, full-time DFS player, lineup provider. You worked with Big Bear DFS during NBA. You guys were Average Bear DFS, very successful during NBA. But I got to ask, how is the MLB season treating you?
MLB is a whole new monster, when it comes to sports, it's the hardest to really predict. I always say NBA is probably the easiest because, like, imagine taking LeBron James in a cake matchup and he scores 0 points. How pissed would you be? Well, it can happen in baseball
right
anytime. Like, Bryce Harper can drop zero, Trout can drop zero, versus I could go out there and pitch and they could just not hit me for some reason.
Right.
And last NBA season was great with Big Bear. Me and him are still friends. We're not doing NBA this year together, but I still love the guy. He's still one of the best cash NBA players out there, and I wish him the best of luck. He wishes me the best of luck. We'll still talk. We'll bounce plays off each other, and I hope to have learned a lot about NBA cash since I'm more of a GPP player from him, and I'm guessing he will take some of my random GPP knowledge into consideration as well this year too.
Yeah, no, worthy follow out there, Big Bear DFS for you guys. I'd expect him back around during the NFL season. But I think that's interesting. You mentioned, the unpredictability of MLB DFS and you being a GPP player. And I, for the majority of an NBA season, I dabbled in both tournaments and GPPs. But in MLB, I have switched myself over to, tournament only, more or less, because of the variance. Do you feel like I'm not making this up? MLB lends itself towards tournaments, no?
I believe so because for me, comparing NBA and MLB, if you think of chalk, it'll be people that will be owned almost 70% of the time in NBA, and unless somebody gets super hot in MLB, they can always be around 20 or 30%, which is considered chalk in my opinion for MLB. You'll never see somebody higher than 50% owned unless they're literally hitting like 400 for the past week or something, or like Aaron Judge or someone just gets super popular, like Eric Thames in the beginning of the season. He had his crazy run, but then you have to know baseball, the great hitters only hit the ball 30% of the time for a reason. So you kind of have to know, okay, they're going to regress. It's going to go back to normal. So you have to know, don't stay on that person too long. And there's just so many other options when it comes to baseball. You can have three outfielders, which just gives you so many different options. So you can get, the percentages are lower when you think about it.
Yeah, truly. No, that's a really, you're absolutely right. I'm always, it's funny when I compared my experiences earlier in the year, I would always expect, the guys that I would consider to be in obvious good situations, and you'd open up, your lineups and you'd look at guys who are owned at 7-8% and you're saying, "What, this is, wasn't this clear as day?" and then, sure enough, he goes out and he gets you three. But I guess the question, as it relates to the GPPs, as it relates to MLB process, we're gonna talk strategy and process. That's what I like to do during these interviews with guys who are playing full time. Where do you start with a slate for Major League Baseball?
I like to start with pitching. I try to do, I watched your video yesterday of the cash pitching. I didn't watch the GPP one, but I watched the cash one, and I loved it. Like, I could tell everybody on here exactly how I do it, which would basically just be copying what you said in your video. Like, if people want to honestly learn a good way to do it, watch your video. 100%, it's the way to do it. You all the stats you talked about, the hard hit rate, the walk rate, the strikeout rate. The Vegas is huge, obviously, in all sports, because Vegas doesn't lose money or else they still wouldn't be there. That's what you've got to do. And last year I started with baseball a lot more often, and I didn't really get into Fangraphs. I didn't know much about them. I did mainly RotoGrinder stuff. But now that Fangraphs is there, I've been using it a lot this year now. you can literally do everything you want just on Fangraphs. Instead of going, I used to go, like I said, Roto Grinders to see some things. Then I would literally just Google the pitcher's name to see their splits and stuff and the more advanced stats. And now that Fangraphs is there, you can literally do all in one. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think the nice thing is sometimes you are industry neutral when you're on Fangraphs, right? Mm-hmm. You're not getting the noise from predictions or projections or other people's models. You are getting just the straight facts when you go to Fangraphs. So I would agree. It's definitely my spot for research. But I guess when you start with that pitching, what is the thing that you gravitate towards? You know, if you're debating between two pitchers, what statistic are you going to lean on? What trend are you going to lean on when you're debating between, you know, your favorite pitchers on the night?
I like to look at the first thing would be the Vegas line. If one pitcher is just the obvious choice, I think that's huge. And then the splits, righty versus lefty splits, I like to really look at and fly ball to ground ball ratio as well, because you don't want anybody that's going to give up a lot of hard hits with fly balls, like I'm pretty sure you mentioned in your video. Right. If you can get a lot of ground balls, obviously they're not getting strikeouts, which is the huge points in pitching is 3 points compared to, you know, just getting out in an inning. But if let's say a pitcher gets into a jam, let's say they throw 25 pitches in an inning, 30 pitches in an inning somehow, but then, you know, they can get those ground balls. They come back and throw like a 10 pitch inning next inning. They kind of save themselves, which is great. And in baseball, I love a pitcher that goes, one of my favorite pitchers this year has been Jeff Samardzija. He just goes 6 or 7 innings every single time. And you can't get a quality start if you don't go 6 innings at least. So,
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You point out, you know, Vegas and a guy who's capable of getting ground balls. And in my mind, that is sometimes an underrated place to look, because there's two things there. You are looking at Vegas to see if a guy is favored to get himself a win. There's 6 points right there, and you're looking for a ground ball rate that's relatively solid so that you don't you mask blow up potential, which is the reason that a guy would get yanked before the sixth inning and not get himself the quality start. And I think sometimes, you know, we obsess on FanDuel, we can obsess over strikeout rate, we can obsess over K potential, regardless of some of the other factors, when the reality is if you can acquire those 10 points for a win in a quality start, you've gained yourself, 10 points, you know, which essentially is, you know, 3.3 strikeouts. So, you know, it certainly seems worth it to me, in my mind, to consider those things just as heavily as we would consider a strikeout rate.
Yep.
So let's talk about sticks here. Let's talk about the bats. I guess the big thing that I'm always concerned about and the thing that I'm always weighing on, you know, when I'm evaluating my batters, I'm really actually evaluating their opposing pitcher more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes, you know, that can be to my detriment. You know, you go all in on the Padres, for example, because you know that there's a flaw in the pitcher that they're facing and it just doesn't pan out. I mean, are you more concerned with the opposing pitcher or the quality of the offense?
So a lot of people, when I started baseball, I did look at BVP, and a lot of people still do. And I can imagine I do as well, but there has to be a lot of at-bats there. I can't just take someone who has 5 at-bats versus that pitcher and they hit like the ball 2 times and go, oh yeah, good play. But I like the matchup. You know, I obviously righties, lefties, lefties, righties. I avoid lefties a lot, which, you know, some people have reverse splits. The first person that comes to mind is Justin Turner. Righties a lot better than lefties. Recently, Gary Sanchez, people have been noticing hitting righties a lot better than lefties. And for me, the quality of the pitcher they face, obviously, if it's a good baseball player facing a bad baseball pitcher, I like that batter more. It just makes more sense. And then that gets you into also, if it's a really bad pitcher on the slate, like Bronson Arroyo, oh my God, everybody in the DFS community loves a stack against Bronson Arroyo, throws like 60 miles an hour. So that's when you start getting into, all right, this is the team I think if I'm going to stack somebody today, I'm going to stack this team just because the pitcher that they're playing is so bad.
Right. Yeah, I think that's key. I mean, one of the things that I try to remind myself is these guys, these batters are Major League Baseball players for a reason, mm-hmm. right? And if the pitcher, the quality of the pitcher, I think varies probably more often than the quality of a hitter who's at the top half of a lineup in this league, you know, those guys can hit baseballs. And, you know, they get more opportunities to do it than, you know, the pitcher will have to, you know, to try and strike them out. Yeah. I guess in some respects, you kind of have to play the odds there and say that I think that the batter can get the better of this matchup. So I kind of agree with you there. You mentioned stacking. Now, I am gospel truth all day stacking. I have a hard time even rolling out a lineup with one or two one-offs in it. I am always. What is your feeling about stacking? Are you always all in? Are you going two four-mans? How are you building your stacks on a daily basis?
So the slate really depends. So if you have a big slate, I find it harder to stack just like two teams because there's just so many different options out there. But if you ever look at a winning GPP, basically they're stacking two teams, but it's so hard to get it right. Like they're making 10 lineups with every different team you can think of. So with GPPs, that's when I will stack majority of the time. Almost all the time I stack GPPs. Cash games, I find it easier to avoid stacking just because you can kind of get different bats in there because I want to try to get a little bit of variance in my cash lineups. And like I said, I don't handle all the cash lineups. My partner right now in baseball, Walkoff, does. But we bounce plays off of each other. But for GPPs, if you look at the winning GPPs, it's almost always a two-team or three-team stack. So GPPs, for sure, I say if you want to stack, go for it. I have nothing against it. I do it majority of the time, like I said. Otherwise, I'll do a contrarian for GPP and avoid. And I'll still, like you said, it's still hard to only put one or two people from a team. So I will almost always have two people from the same team, almost always. Yeah. In the smaller slates, like let's say you're playing a late slate or something, and you're kind of forced to stack, right? So I did this in basketball a couple times where I would take a late slate of two or three games. I would make a lineup for that. Then I'd go back to the main slate and force myself to use those same people and stack them because those are the things that you'll see that will win. So if you're looking at a main slate of like 10 games, look at the late slate and tell yourself, if this is a good stack, if that's a team I'm going to stack, put it in the main slate too because you're forcing yourself to stack. And if you want to play your another main slate, two lines, one stack, one not, then you can play the late line as the main line stack, if that makes sense.
I think that's a really interesting because what you're almost forcing your brain into a smaller range of decision making, right? Yeah. And a 15 game slate, you're absolutely right. It's almost overwhelming how many different options for stacking, you know. And if you're paying attention in the industry, you're going to hear X, Y, Z options for this team and that team, or I like that team because of the weather and don't leave out this team because of the wind. And
playing at Coors, you got to play Coors.
Yeah, you got to play Coors, exactly. So you get overwhelmed by the amount of decisions, and I think that is a really interesting and contrarian way to do it. You know, if you go to that late or that express slate and you say, okay, what would my lineup look like here if I was forced to make the best possible lineup on this slate? Yeah, and that's a unique approach, and it's actually a very interesting process piece. You know, just to test yourself and make sure that you're, you know, staying true to the way you want to do it. All right, so, you know, one of the things that we talked about during NBA season that was really important was game selection. What tournaments have you been playing? Where do you feel like there is money to be made in MLB DFS? You've heard a lot of people around Twitter sphere complaining about how high cash lines have been, how almost, you know, in some cases that cash and GPP lines are flipped. You expect the cash line to be lower than the GPP line and it's not. What have you found this season?
It's, you know, there's those times when the people that do play the chalk, that's mostly what happens when they're flipped, is the chalk hits everywhere and people play the chalk plays in GPPs, so that'll be higher than the cash. So I still, you know, me and Big Bear praised it in NBA. You got to play your cash games, your 50-50s and double ups to really make your money. and your GPPs are the bonuses, you know, like you're supposed to technically play 10% of your whatever you're playing that night. Let's do for math reasons, say $100. You're supposed to play 10% of that, so $10 in GPPs, and 90% of that, $90 in cash games. It's hard to stick to it if you're a degenerate like I am, and you see it's you can get sucked into those GPPs every time. It happens in the Millie Makers for football every week. You see the $1 million prize, the top prizes in GPPs for $3, you can win 20,000 instead of six. So yeah, you get sucked into it. It's a lot easier to do that. But if you think of DFS as a marathon, it takes a lot of time to build the bankroll to be able to play the higher tournaments. Now, the GPPs, if you play a lot of money, you can play the higher end GPPs like the $50 to $300 entries. If you can do single entry with those, you're not going to win as much, obviously, as the multi entries, but you really have a better chance in the single entries with those amount of money because you're getting rid of those sharks that can play 300 lineups for $300.
Yeah.
And instead of doing that, you play $300 with one line and they can only play one lineup. And a lot of the times you're going to beat them. And that's just playing the numbers there. So that's just how I see it. The single entry is better than multi-entries. Cash games are your bread and butter.
Yeah. That's a really good point. The further you go up the buy-in ladder, you know, once you cross that tournament threshold of, you know, what is it, $7, $8, $10, you are with players who are going to be playing a lot more volume, mm-hmm. who are comfortable risking a lot more money, and you are at a unique disadvantage. For example, in the $9 squeeze, you're going to be at a unique disadvantage because of the ability of guys to roll out a hundred multiple lineups there. And you have to be able to, you have to be able to discipline yourself and try to find a unique way to enter a single entry tournament. And those are certainly, that's certainly really good advice. I like that idea a lot. But you know, the multi-entry cheap buy-in tournaments are fun too. And they're good. I preach this. This is a good, if you are a recreational player, the $1, $2, $3 tournaments are great space. They're a lot of fun. They're occupied mostly by recreational players. It gives you a good sense of how to hedge in the field. It's definitely fun.
Yeah, and if you want to test out different strategies, like when last year I would do multi-entries and I would do like one stack, one contrarian, and then one just regular where I wouldn't stack as much. I'd have like maybe two people, but I would spread it out kind of like a cash lineup. So right. I throw my cash, I throw my stack, and I throw my contrarian all in like a $3 GPP.
Right. Exactly. And guys, this is not CSU Ram and Jonathan Bales talking about how they're going to take down the, you know, $555 monster. This is, you know, we are lineup logic. We're recreational players. Like this is, you know, these are good ideas and strategies for the recreational player, right?
Your average Joe, you know,
what's that?
Your average Joe.
That's it, man. That's it. Average Joe. All right. So what did you learn? Like, what do you think, you know, coming out of the first half here, what was the biggest thing that you learned, whether it be, you know, something that went well for you or some kind of boneheaded mistake that you feel like you made in the first half of MLB DFS?
I would say that's a good question. For the most part, you just got to take MLB it's 162 games. So it's so long. It feels like the season's already over, speaking from DFS wise, when you're used to like NFL or NBA. So you got to stick to it. You're going to have your down times. Like, we had like a week or two in the middle of just nothing was hitting and we were getting discouraged. You got to keep your chin up. It's a marathon. That's for sure. And, the wins will come and they'll come in bunches. They're not like, I entered 2 months ago. I put $40 into the slate, early slate, and won 750. That was great. I was a first baseman away from taking about $7,000. I'll never forget picking Ryan Zimmerman over Tommy Joseph. And I cried a little bit, but, I couldn't believe it. Zimmerman had 0 points, you know, and Joseph had 27.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. You can't, you know, you're absolutely right to say that the wins are going to come and they're going to go. And I think one of the things that I have decided that with MLB, if you want to be in it for the long haul, you know, not only should you reduce the amount perhaps that you're buying in on a nightly basis, because you're going to have to stretch your bankroll. And like you said, there's going to be cold spells. And, you know, at the same time, you got to keep your chin up and you have to keep doing your research and following a good process. And if your process isn't working, then you seek out new resources. And you, there's so much information out there for Major League Baseball that you can always add something to your research. All right. So what do you think? What kind of advantage do you see going into the second half? Are there any trends, teams, things that you're looking to exploit as you go into the second half of the season here?
Well, I did doubt my I doubted my own Brewers going into the season, not going to lie. I'm from Wisconsin. I thought the Brewers would be garbage this year. And right now they're actually killing it and it's blowing me away. So I have to keep my mind open for, you know, those quote-unquote, I think they're bad teams, actually doing well. Trust your research. I got to keep trusting my research, even if, like you said, you have a bad day or two. And just keep pushing forward. I'm going to try to target, personally, like I said, I don't like to do lefty-lefties as much. But I have to think, if it's a good baseball player and a bad pitcher, you know, he hits home runs eventually off lefties, right? So I got to trust that. Keep an open mind to anything. If something's not working, listen to friends, listen to other people. Like in basketball, I was getting frustrated a little bit. I had like a week or two where I was off and Big Bear's telling me I got to do this or this. And I'm a stubborn guy. I was like, you know, I can do it. I've did it before. But he's like, yeah, but you're not doing it right now. So something's wrong. So I had to, you know, swallow my pride and, you know, admit when I'm wrong, and everybody has to do it. And eventually you'll find the right thing. Trends come and go. DFS wasn't even around 5 years ago. Like, so
yeah, I think it's interesting. I like the idea that you have to keep an open mind, because we're going to see offenses that were good in the first half slow down. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to see offenses that were bad in the second half or mediocre in the first half improve in the second half of the season. And, you know, there's going to be teams that just bottom out. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be changes in the rotation, and keeping an open mind and being aware of those things and not getting complacent is key. And I think the Brewers are a really interesting example. We had this team that was, you know, pretty much just righty mashers when you had Thames and Shaw that were super hot. And all of a sudden you get Ryan Braun back off the DL and Jesus Aguilar emerging as you know, a platoon guy with Eric Thames, and they're hitting lefties extremely well as well. And, you know, I think for me, one of the things that I like to identify is teams that are trending in the right direction. You know, the Kansas City Royals, for example, are a team that everybody assumes are terrible. They're terrible against right-handed pitching.
Yeah.
They're very good against lefties, and we have to keep these kinds of things in mind, you know? So those kinds of trends, you're absolutely right. Keep an open mind, you know, find new resources, ideas to try and, you know, continue to let your game evolve as the season evolves.
And I have I have to start taking people in the bottom of the order. I try not to my best of my ability. I try to get batters like maybe one through six. But like that Frazier guy from the Yankees, I knew he was a good pick the last like 3 days of the before break. But he was batting ninth and or seventh or ninth or whatever. And I just couldn't let myself do it for some reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know what? It's not optimal. That's the thing. It's not optimal from an expected value. You know, the batters in that spot in the order do not return as many fantasy points over the course of a season. That's true. That said, they also don't garner any ownership because of that reason, or because they're an extremely cheap value in a potent offense like the Yankees with Frazier, for example. They can return a high value just because of that price tag or their situation. So you do, like, you know, it's a very good example, open-mindedness. Now, are you going to go down and pay, you know, $3,600 for a batter who's in the eight hole? No.
right.
You know, but there are situations where you have to be open-minded and be willing to stack the second half or the middle of an order just for purposes of leverage. I agree with that.
Is it just me or is Joey Gallo always super expensive?
He is, you know,
And he bats 200. just hits home runs every time, but he hits
a home run or a strikeout, man. Yeah. He's a home run or a strikeout. His price went down and then he got injured. He's actually a guy that he will probably be pretty cheap coming out of the break because he was out of the roster for a while.
Mm-hmm.
God, I love stacking the Rangers so much right now.
I loved going against them earlier in the season because they were just striking out left and right. Then Beltre came back and everybody, it's like the team flipped and all of a sudden they were just going off.
Yeah, well, you put Beltre and Gomez in the middle of that order, and all of a sudden, one through six is terrifying.
Yeah.
All right, hey Joe, this has been a lot of fun. Where can people find you on Twitter, my friend?
So Twitter, it's at @AverageJoeDFS. We just changed the name of the Twitter where we actually post lineups, and that is now at @Triumphant_DFS. New logo and everything, pretty slick. We're running deals, obviously. I'm doing actually, as a thank you to the DFS community, I am actually doing NFL for free just because, personally, NFL isn't every day.
Right.
Baseball and basketball is every day. So to me, is it really daily fantasy sports when it's football? I don't know. But it's my last year of college. I'm getting married in a month. So I'm going to have a lot of stuff on my plate. So if I want to take a week off, I can take a week off without feeling bad. And, you know, that's the thing when you charge people. You want to deliver lines every day that win, and if you miss a day, you really I feel bad about it. I don't want anybody to feel left out. You know, they paid me and whatever. I got to give them a product. So NFL is free, but that gets me to NBA and NHL. So
that's
right
awesome.
Now, yeah, if you're not paying for MLB right now, NBA and NHL is only $100 cash GPP lineups for both. But boy, Tom is coming back for hockey. He won the $16,000 last year in the GPP. That was actually the line given to subs as well. So they did well that night too. I didn't play it because I'm an idiot. and Tom reminds me about it all the time. He was at my bachelor party and it was great. But yeah, and people that have signed up for our baseball, their average bear at the time, now Triumphant, it's only $75 for them for the next two or three people. I did a special with the first five. So that's where I'm at right now. So basically, you pay that, you're good until next MLB season.
There you go. Triumphant DFS. Check it out. Hey, free providing lines for free, you know, NFL, that's just fun. That's just for fun. It's, you know, if you are, you know, if you're a recreational player and you're looking for, you know, some good takes from a guy who's a grinder and a regular, this is a good spot to go. Joe, I appreciate you coming on. Good luck. Good luck with the second half of the MLB season, and I'm just going to give you one piece of advice.
Oh, yeah.
Stack the Astros until they're all priced at $6,000.
I'll do it right away, Friday or Saturday, whatever. I'll stack them just for you.
All right, good. Good stuff, good stuff. All right, buddy. Thank you for coming on, guys. Average Joe DFS, Triumphant DFS. Go find him, follow him on Twitter, and wish the man a happy birthday. It's
Thank
his
you.
Birthday, for God's sakes. Happy birthday.
Thank you.